Welcome to Eye to the Future. I'm Josh Bianchin. For 24 years, John Freshwater was an Ohio middle school science teacher. The Mount Vernon City School District Board of Education suspended Freshwater without pay in 2008, investigated his teaching practices, held hearings on those practices, and then terminated Freshwater's employment in 2011. The board terminated Freshwater based in large part on a hearing officer's determination that Freshwater, quote, gave students reason to doubt the accuracy and or veracity of scientists, science textbooks, and or science in general, end quote. The hearing officer also determined that Freshwater, quote, failed to adhere to established curriculum, end quote, based on three findings. Quote, one, Freshwater allowed his students to examine evidence both for and against evolution. Two, he developed a method of allowing students to point out passages in printed materials that could be questioned or debated by saying, here. And three, some of the evidence against evolution was based upon the principles of creationism and intelligent design, end quote. On February 27, 2013, attorney Rita Dunaway of the Rutherford Institute argued before the Ohio Supreme Court the question of academic freedom. In the following, Ms. Dunaway and I discuss the case.
This is how really the whole evolution issue surfaced again, because what they found was that Mr. Freshwater had offered students evidence of the weaknesses of evolutionary theory. And so that was one of the things that the school board seized upon as evidence of his injecting religion into the classroom.
Now, after the board had found supposedly this evidence of religious instruction by way of teaching weaknesses of evolution, what did the board do?
The board recommended that he be terminated, or the board actually adopted a resolution of termination, which was the event that then led to this 2-year administrative hearing before the referee.
This is the gentleman who provided a recommendation to the board that the board adopt, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Why did it take that much time to start and finish?
Well, there were a lot of witnesses, a lot of teachers, a lot of students. The board even brought in experts on the topic of evolution, who, of course, were outraged that anyone should dare question or criticize the theories of evolution in a public school classroom. Mm-hmm. So there were just a lot of witnesses, a lot of exhibits. I can tell you that the transcripts were over 6,000 pages. So it was quite a beast to prepare all of this, not having actually been at those hearings myself, but having to get on top of 6,000 pages of transcripts is quite a task.
Now, when you say that he was teaching both the weaknesses and strengths of evolution, critics will often say, well, that just is another way of saying that you're teaching creationism, ergo religion. Can you speak specifically to, having now read the transcripts and mastered them, what sort of teaching practices was he actually engaging in that got people so upset?
Again, it was really just something such as offering a handout that identified certain things that didn't seem to fit with evolutionary theory. One of the handouts I remember talked about peppered moths and how some of the evidence that has been put forth in science textbook for years has faked certain things, has staged photographs that were set forth as if they were real. So really, there was never any mention of the book of Genesis or the creation account in there. It really and truly was a matter of Mr. Freshwater saying, here's what evolution teaches. Here's what evolution cannot explain. And here is some evidence that scientists supporting evolution have not always been straightforward.
I think I've read somewhere that in addition to discussing these icons of evolution, peppered moths is an example, mm-hmm. that he allowed students to point to lines of text in the textbook and say, here, this is possibly challengeable. Was that a practice that he engaged in, John Freshwater?
That was a practice, and you're right. That was a focal point for the whole investigation, and they certainly used that as evidence that Mr. Freshwater was injecting his religious beliefs into the classroom. But I think it's important to note that that was not a technique that was reserved specifically for the times when the class was discussing evolution. Mm. It was actually a technique that was used throughout Mr. Freshwater's science class. And he explained at one point at the hearing that the reason he adopted that technique was because there were times in the past when he would have students constantly raising their hands to challenge or question something that they were reading in class in the textbook. And so Mr. Freshwater adopted this technique of saying, okay, students, when you see something that you think is questionable, that you would challenge or disagree with, just raise your hand and say here, and that'll allow us to keep moving. So really, when you understand it in context, mm-hmm. it seems a little absurd to point to that as evidence of injecting personal religious beliefs.
I would have loved to have had a teacher that encouraged that sort of critical engagement with textbooks, because as you know, not everything written in the textbooks is accurate and worthy of trusting support.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think that's one of the reasons really that this case is so critical. It's so important because you give me a classroom where students can't question what's in their textbook and teachers can't talk about flaws and theories and can't allow students to have civil, respectful debates within the classroom. And I'll show you a classroom where kids are bored to death and are not engaged and not interested.
That's a really good point. There were a couple of court cases after the board hearing, isn't that right?
After the board hearing, the appeal process began because, of course, the board did adopt the referee's report after the 2 years of hearings, and the board did issue a final resolution officially terminating Mr. Freshwater. So after that, there was an appeal first to the Common Pleas Court and then to the district court.
Were there constitutional issues in play in the pleas court and the appellate court, or was that saved for the Supreme Court?
It really was saved. At the Common Pleas Court level, the question before the court was the termination supported by the evidence? So it was an evidentiary matter at that point. And that court just summarily affirmed the decision without really any analysis. And at the district court level, the opinion is a little bit longer, a little bit more in depth. But again, the standard of review at that point was abuse of discretion. So the district court was looking to, did the Common Pleas Court abuse its discretion in affirming the decision? The district court likewise did not address the constitutional issues at all.
What was that issue in the Supreme Court case?
The issue at the Ohio Supreme Court was, is there any window of academic freedom for teachers? Mm-hmm. In other words, where a teacher is discussing the curriculum that he's required to teach, where he's complying with the board's policies and specific directives, can he be fired on the basis of the viewpoint of the ideas that he's discussing? That really is the issue.
In the phrasing of this issue, he was complying with district and school policies. That's what we said, right?
He was absolutely complying with the district's policies. And in fact, I think it's really interesting that in the course of the 2 years of the administrative hearing, the school district wasn't the one introducing the policies. That really wasn't even an argument they were making. It was Mr. Freshwater and Kelly Hamilton, his attorney at that point, who were introducing the policies to show his compliance.
Since he was complying with academic freedom policies, one wonders why he would have gotten in trouble.
Yeah. Well, again, there was a lot of history behind all of this. And with the 2003 introduction of a proposal to specifically change the curriculum, and then with the Tesla coil incident, of course, you know, one gets the sense that this was a board determined to do something to take care of what at this point was a big public relations issue for it. But yeah, it's really surprising with the content of the board's policies being what they are, the board has a policy specifically stating that teachers have academic freedom. And yet at the Ohio Supreme Court, the board's main argument is that Mr. Freshwater didn't have academic freedom because he's a public school teacher. So it's really interesting to focus on what the policies say and then to juxtapose what the board is trying to do to this teacher.
I did recall opposing counsel arguing that point, specifically saying that this policy doesn't apply to him or doesn't apply to him on this subject.
Uh-huh.
Do you recall what the opposing counsel was trying to do to your argument on compliance with policies?
Well, a couple of things. One is that it was very clear, maybe more so from the school board's briefs, the written brief submitted on the case than the oral argument, but it was clear that the board was trying to take advantage of a number of federal court cases where other courts have distanced themselves from the idea that a public school teacher has a right to academic freedom. Again, the thing that makes that so bizarre is that the board has specifically granted academic freedom in its own policies. But the other thing I would say about that, and of course this is a thread running through the entire case, is the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And of course the board wants to cling to that and say, because criticizing evolution is beneficial to religion, in that making any mention of the flaws of evolutionary theory violates the separation of church and state. So that, of course, was a big part of the board's argument that academic freedom could not apply in this context.
Is that a dichotomy that you were willing to accept?
Certainly as a matter of logic, it doesn't make any sense. And as a matter of law, the Supreme Court has rejected the idea that just because something is consistent with religion, or even where something gives a tangential, coincidental benefit to religion, that is not the advancement of religion per se in the sense that violate the Establishment Clause. In fact, the Supreme Court has even said, and I think it's important not to lose sight of this, the Supreme Court has specifically said that it would be okay to teach a variety of theories on origins of life as long as the teaching is done with a secular purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I submit that that's exactly what was going on here. Not even that Mr. Freshwater was teaching creation, but everything he was doing in the classroom had the secular purpose of increasing students' education and competency on this topic.
Why does this case matter? In your own words, Rita.
Well, the case matters because it's about censorship, and it's about censorship where it is least appropriate, in a classroom full of students and teachers who are engaged in a curriculum-related, age-appropriate discussion about science. That is not a place where we want the government coming in and saying, well, you can't talk about this idea because we don't like it or because it's consistent with religion. That leads to the classroom as being a totalitarian setting. And that's not a place where kids are going to learn. That's not a place where future citizens are going to be educated. When you stifle teachers, you stifle learning. And that's why this matters. I'd also say the case is important because it manifests the extreme degree to which our culture has embraced this phobia of anything religion in a public place, in a public school in particular. You know, just because these ideas are related to religious ideas, they're seen as absolutely inappropriate in the classroom. You know, that's just wrong. A student can't get a good education if it's completely devoid of any mention of anything religion. That's just not education.
I wish the media had picked up your themes rather than distortion. But
I tried, Josh.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad that you've done interviews putting out the truth on this case. Speak a little bit about the coverage. Has it been accurate or inaccurate?
I'd say on balance, it's been very inaccurate and very misleading. And the best example of that is all of the media focus on the Tesla coil incident. If you were to just go off of what has been reported in the mainstream media, you would think that this case is about a child abuser teacher who is burning kids with religious symbols. Well, the truth is that whole aspect of the case was thrown out at the very first stage at the administrative hearing. The referee found that speculation and imagination had pushed reality aside. And that's a quote from the referee's report. Yeah. So the fact that the media remained so intently focused on that just shows the bias. And to me, it shows just an absence of a real desire to report truth and to get at the important issues of this case.
I read, for example, from CBS that the issue at Ohio Supreme Court was to, quote, determine the extent to which a now-fired public school science teacher had the right to push his religious beliefs in class.
It's so misleading as to be comical, Josh. I can't see it any other way but that. I mean, to put that out as a question, of course a public school science teacher does not have the right to, quote, push his religious beliefs in class. Of course not. We would not be at the Ohio Supreme Court if that were the question.
Right.
The evidence in the case just does not support in any way that Mr. Freshwater was ever pushing his religious beliefs, unless you interpret questioning evolution, questioning the science, questioning the evidence. If you interpret that as pushing one's religious beliefs, well, then maybe that's what it's about. But I just can't get there from the record of the case.
And I would be surprised if the justices also got there.
I will say that I was very, very pleased and impressed with the questions that the justices asked. They really seemed to get what the central issues were in the case and not to be stuck on the superficial aspects of it.
In case the court decides unfavorably, what can people of Ohio or even nationally do about the decision?
Well, there's not a whole lot, unfortunately, that they can do about the decision, but I do favor the idea of pursuing legislation that makes it very clear that the state intends for teachers to have a measure of freedom in discussing scientific ideas, including the weaknesses of scientific ideas. I think that makes perfect sense. I think it's what teachers should be able to do. And we need to give teachers that breathing room.
What other things would you like listeners to know?
The board is asking a court to go where no court has gone before. The board is asking the court to say that a teacher cannot criticize evolution in the classroom. That is censorship. This case is critical for the court to make it very clear that that kind of censorship won't be tolerated.
I have to ask, is this appealable to the U.S. Supreme Court?
I do see that as a real possibility.
What sort of ruling would bring it within the realm of possibility that cert might be granted by the Supreme Court?
If the Ohio Supreme Court were to fail to protect academic freedom, I could see it as being an opportunity for the U.S. Supreme Court to sort out that whole issue of what is allowed and what isn't allowed in a public school classroom.
Case of Garcetti v. Ceballos.
Yep.
That's an important state employee speech case. Court in that case, I think it was written in 06, reserved this question for a later date, whether the idea that state speech is sort of bought and paid for by an employer and therefore has a right to restrict it, whether that also applies to in-class instructional speech. Could this possibly be the sort of case where the court gets to weigh in on that reserved space in Garcetti?
It absolutely could. That was presented to the Ohio Supreme Court for them to consider. So I hope that window will remain open.
John Freshwater not only taught the textbook, including evolution, but permitted and engaged in classroom critique of evolution and other textbook science subjects in order to introduce students to science practice. The school board, Freshwater's employer, labeled his critical pedagogy religion, and therefore outside the protection of district academic freedom policy and federal law on academic freedom. For this, the board terminated Freshwater and fought him all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court. However, as Ms. Dunaway explained, the board misinterpreted critique of textbook evolution as promotion of religion in science class, perhaps out of hostility toward what the board considered religion. The Ohio Supreme Court now has the opportunity to remind school administrators that critical pedagogy on evolution and other subjects is covered by constitutional academic freedom and is not the same thing as the promotion of religion. If the Ohio Supreme Court fails to do this, then it may be time for the Ohio legislature to create a statutory right to academic freedom to protect sound teaching methods. The decision is due any day now. This has been Joshua Yunkin for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.